So let's talk about hardware virtualization. In hardware virtualization, the hypervisor, a software component, runs one or multiple virtual machines, each of which consists of an operating system and processes. The virtual machines run in the deprivileged guest mode, in contrast to the host mode. The hypervisor exposes to the virtual machine interfaces which are similar to those of real hardware, allowing the operating system that runs in the virtual machine to behave as if it's running directly on real hardware. Hardware virtualization is mostly used for server consolidation, increasing hardware utilization and improving efficiency. While hardware virtualization is around for many years and available in commodity servers for over 15 years, it has some limitations that cause it to be challenged by alternatives, specifically containers. Relatively to containers, hardware virtualization is inefficient. A memory overcommitment of virtual machines, for example, is not widely used. The hypervisor is also oblivious to whatever happens within the virtual machine, so it cannot provide services to the VMs, for example, intrusion detection, very easily. The basic reason for those limitations are the semantic gap. The interaction between the virtual machines and the hypervisor is mainly based on architectural hardware events. For example, the execution of certain instructions in the VM is being trapped and emulated by the hypervisor. As a result, the interface between those two entities is relatively limited and simple. The VM is unaware of physical resource constraints, for instance, whether the system running low on memory. In a similar way, the hypervisor cannot access the internal state of the virtual machine. It cannot figure out, for example, that a certain memory page of the virtual machine is free, its data is not needed, and can be and this information is needed to make all kinds of decisions. For example, if the system is running low on memory and the hypervisor wants to reclaim memory, it wants to know whether a page is free in order to decide whether to discard the page when it reclaims it or to swap it out to the drive. As noted before, virtualization degrades performance and prevents IO virtual machine introspection, but this is not only a bug, but a feature. The simple interface makes the hypervisor more robust as the trusted computing base that is needed for virtualization is smaller. To bridge the semantic gap, power virtualization can be used. In power virtualization, the hypervisor and the virtual machine communicate through an extended interface, which is designed for virtualization and is more expressive. Let's see the existing power virtualization techniques and consider the example we saw before, in which the hypervisor wishes to know whether a certain page of the virtual machine is free. This will show us the limitations of existing techniques. So the most common technique is called hypercalls, in which the virtual machine, which are analog to system calls, in which the virtual machine sends notifications and information to the hypervisor or request services. In this case, we can see that the virtual machine can inform whenever a page is allocated or deallocated to the hypervisor. But this would impose a great overhead if the information is not needed by the hypervisor at this certain moment. The second option that hypervisors can use is upcalls, in which the hypervisor invokes code that runs in the virtual machine, mainly using an interrupt that is injected into the virtual machine. In this example, the code will provide back to the hypervisor the information whether a certain page is free. And doing so, the hypervisor can only invoke the code when it needs this information. Nevertheless, in both cases, we see that the overhead of context switch is high between the guest mode and the host mode. In addition, in the case of the upcalls, the code that runs in the virtual machine might be delayed because, for example, the virtual machine is already handling another interrupt. Finally, we have the third case, which is called pre-virtualization, which is not commonly used. In this case, the hypervisor injects a certain code into the virtual machine. This code does not make the performance more efficient, But it makes the communication more flexible between the hypervisor and the virtual machine. The interface can be changed without changing the virtual machine. We can summarize the existing power virtual mechanisms in a table. The roles define who the initiator of the communication between the hypervisor and the VM is. The columns define in which context the request is executed. As we can see, three of the four options are covered. The one that does not exist is the one that the hypervisor in which the hypervisor initiates the execution of VM code, and this code is executed in the hypervisor context, in the host mode. This is an interesting option. First, if the hypervisor is the initiator, it means that the hypervisor can pull updates from the virtual machine only when it wants to get some information from the virtual machine. Second, when the execution happens in the hypervisor, we can run privileged operations and access hypervisor state, which is necessary for many operations. Finally, if the initiator and the execution context are the same, no context switch is needed. All of these properties make the missing option very appealing. We call this option hyper-upcalls. So to define hyper-upcalls, hyper-upcalls are short encapsulated programs that the virtual machine provides to the hypervisor and defines which events would invoke those programs. The hypervisor uses these programs to query the virtual machine state or to notify the virtual machine on hypervisor events. Building these programs is relatively easy since they can reuse existing operating system code. And one nice feature of these programs is that they can be executed while the virtual machine is suspended and does not run. So let's talk about hyper-upcalls safety. Obviously, running code that is provided by the virtual machine in the privileged host mode is dangerous. We need to ensure several safety properties are kept by the hyper-upcall. First, it should not be able to run directly unprivileged instructions. It should only access memory it is allowed to. It should complete its execution with a certain amount of time in order not to jeopardize the system's stability or cause it to stall. There are several ways to obtain such safety. For example, software fault isolation or proof carrying code. We chose to use verifiable code, specifically eBPF. eBPF, or enhanced BPF, is an extension of the Berkeley packet filter, technology that was originally designed to allow applications to define packet filters that the operating system invokes. BPF bytecode has provable safety. And people realize that this property makes it suitable for additional purposes. For example, filtering system calls, which is commonly used by sandboxes. eBPF added registers and instructions to BPF, and using a ahead-of-time compiler, it can be compiled into rather efficient native code. Moreover, the LLVM compiler provides backend that allows to compile C code into eBPF, which is essential for our goal. We realized that the interface between programs and kernels resembles the interface between virtual machines and hypervisors. And as a result, we can eBPF is very suitable for our purpose in hyper-upcalls. Here is an overall flow in which hyper-upcall goes through in regard to verification. The operating system developers create an hyper-upcall based on the existing operating system code. This code is then compiled once into a verifiable bytecode. When the operating system is loaded, it registers the hyper-upcall in the hypervisor through an hypercall. And the hypervisor checks its safety. If the bytecode passes the check, it is translated into native code using a ahead-of-time compiler. Then, once an event occurs, or the hypervisor wants to retrieve information from the virtual machine, it invokes this code. This code can both access the virtual machine memory and call predefined helper functions of the hypervisor. For hyper app calls to be useful, they need to be able to access the virtual machine memory efficiently and transparently. Each hyper app call defines which parts of the virtual machine memory it needs out of the virtual memory. In Linux, for example, most hyper app calls would set the kernel direct mappings and the text section as their working memory. In virtualization, the hypervisor and the virtual machine use different virtual to physical memory mappings. And the hyper app call should behave as if it runs in the guest virtual address space. To make the illusion that hyper app calls run this way, we would like to set identical virtual to physical mappings in the host and in the hyper in the host for the hyper app call memory. However, this virtual memory range might have been already allocated. We therefore allocate for the host a contiguous chunk of virtual memory within an offset from the guest virtual memory. But now we have a problem. We cannot use native pointers, which we wanted to do before. Moreover, the hyper app call is compiled, the addresses that the hyper app call wants to use are not known during compilation time because address space layout randomization sets those addresses only after boot. Yet although we cannot use native pointers directly, we can see that the address translation is pretty simple and can be done rather efficiently in software. We can therefore perform it transparently by extending the compiler backend to emit code that performs the translation using the guest-based and the host-based, which will be known in runtime. Note that most of the pointers that hyper app calls use point to guest address space and need to be adjusted, but still some are set in the host address space. These pointers should not be modified by our compiler extension, and we annotate those pointers in order to avoid this adjusting. Due to the limited time, I would briefly mention other challenges that we needed to address. First, we have the hardware interfaces that operating system expect to use. Operating systems want to generate interrupts and to access CPU registers, but this is not possible in eBPF directly. We therefore provide helper functions. eBPF also has various limitations, some of which are general, but some are related to our specific use case. However, in general, we encountered a lot of bad experience with eBPF in which verification failures and other limitations caused our development to be very hard. We provided a framework in order to circumvent all of those limitations and also the specific limitations that are related to our use case. We have implemented the prototype on top of Linux 4.8 using the KVM hypervisor and created four use cases: tracing of hypervisor events and discarding of free memory, which I will show next, and TLB shutdowns and kernel hardening mechanisms. Excluding tracing, the other use cases were suggested years ago, but are not fully adapted to the limitations of existing power virtualization techniques. First, for each of the use cases, we measure the number of cycles its execution takes in a hyper app call, which is shown here in green, and measured how much it would take to do something equivalent using existing power virtualization mechanism app calls. This number is shown in blue and is broken down into the context switch between the privileged host mode to the deprivileged guest mode and the actual execution time. Due to the context switch overheads, we can see that hyper app calls can be over 8 times faster than app calls. Actually, this overhead might even be higher if the virtual machine is suspended or the virtual machine operating system is slow to respond due to other reasons. An interesting use case of hyper app calls is hypervisor event tracing. While there are many tools for performance profiling and tracing, these tools are limited when they run inside a virtual machine, as they cannot show events that happen inside the hypervisor. This may be important when the overhead of virtualization and the overhead that the hypervisor induces is significant. Currently, there is no good solution for performance analysis inside VMs, and specifically in the cloud, tracing and profiling of hypervisor events is impossible, as cloud providers do not allow customers to run tools directly on their hardware. Using hyper-up calls, we enabled to trace hypervisor events. To do so, we took ftrace, Linux kernel tracing tool, refactored it, and created a version that runs in a hyper-up call, in addition to the version that runs within the VM. Events of the VM and the hypervisor are traced into a shared buffer. When certain events happen in the hypervisor, specifically context switch, the hypervisor calls the hyper-up call that traces the event into the trace buffer that can be that resides inside the virtual machine address space. Note that the hypervisor is oblivious to the hyper-up call actions. It doesn't even know that the hyper-up call is used for tracing. The hypervisor and the virtual machines are decoupled. Updates of the tracing tool do not require hypervisor changes in any way. Finally, let's see how discarding free memory can improve the performance of free memory reclamation, the use case that we saw in the first slide, or the third one. When memory is overcommitted, the hypervisor may need to reclaim virtual machine memory, sometimes rapidly. For example, when a new virtual machine is launched. Two common solutions exist for this situation. The first one is host swapping. The hypervisor can just swap virtual machine memory, including free memory, because it does not know that a certain page is free. Alternatively, the hypervisor can use a power virtual solution, which is known as ballooning. This is an upcall mechanism in which the virtual machine is informed when memory pressures occur in the hypervisor, and the virtual machine reclaims the memory, exploiting the data that it knows about which memory is free, and which should be swapped out. Ballooning, however, is not used in certain cases, for example, under high memory pressure, since it suffers from a basic limitation. A balloon driver needs to run in the virtual machine. The driver execution, however, might be delayed due to scheduling, load contention, or other reasons. Discarding free memory using hyper-up calls uses the virtual machine knowledge to realize whether a certain page is free, promote its reclamation, and discard the content without requiring the virtual machine to run. So such an hyper-up call, as I described, is specifically useful when both virtual CPUs and memory are overcommitted. Here we can see a use case in which we wanted to reclaim 7 GB of memory out of 8 in a virtual machine with 16 virtual CPUs. Most of the memory was free. The CPUs were overcommitted and busy. The x-axis shows the number of physical CPUs that were actually allocated to the VM instead of the 16 that we promised it. The y-axis shows the time it took to reclaim the memory. The shorter, the better. As shown, ballooning works well when the CPUs are not overcommitted. However, when they are, the balloon driver competes with other vCPUs for the physical CPU time. As a result, hyper-up calls can perform up to 6 times better than ballooning when only a single physical CPU is provided for the VM. To conclude, we presented hyper-up calls, a new power virtual mechanism that provides a flexible interface for virtual machine hypervisor cooperation without coupling them. While we described our design and implementation, various alternative designs are possible. For example, the hypervisor might support signed hyper-up calls without verifying their correctness. The key property here is programmability. I would be happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Hi, Andy Tucker from Google. This is really interesting. One of the challenges when doing this sort of thing is always trying to do transactional state updates that require coordination between, in this case, the guest and the hypervisor. Can you talk a little bit about how you do it? You can't just grab a lock, right? So,
So basically, all the use cases we implemented are lock-free. Okay. And I think that this is, in general, because eBPF right now does not support loops, even if we wanted, we could not have done it. I think that in some cases, you will want to have a non-lock-free, non-wait-free hyper-up calls. And that's possible as long as you are not relying on a timely answer. For example, you cannot use such an hyper-up call to decide whether a page is free because you will run out of memory while you are waiting for that. But for other purposes, for example, tracing, you could have, if eBPF supported it, you could have waited for the virtual machine to respond. In the meanwhile, the virtual machine is the only one that would suffer in such case. You would need to avoid deadlocks if something like that is possible.
Okay, thanks.
So this looks really great. And my name is Brennan from Netflix. My question is, this sounds like at the moment, companies will sell modules for doing performance monitoring that's loaded into the kernel, but now companies can develop eBPF programs to do hypervisor monitoring so that guests can get much more information. Is that sort of the direction that you've been seeing this can go?
I did not understand who you think would develop it, so can you just explain who? I thought we had in mind that the operating system developers would provide us such tools. You can have alternative tools which will need to communicate.
Sure, so a performance monitoring vendor who is selling performance monitoring to customers who are running VMs, say on Amazon or wherever, they will often require the VM to run a loadable module to do instrumentation. It sounds like they can now provide eBPF modules that could do hyper-up calls to extend the information.
Yes, of course. One thing that is required, that if you want to access, say, hardware performance counters or something like that, some helper functions would need to be implemented.
Sounds excellent. My other question is, have you run into any limitations with eBPF that could be extended by adding new functions? Have you talked to the eBPF community about that?
We fixed one bug, for that matter. I think there are... I know that you know eBPF better than I do, but I think there are many issues, outstanding issues. I think the list is extensive, you know. I don't know whether to add more to it. I think that many of the issues are known to the eBPF community, but we can take it offline.
Okay, thanks.
Let's do a question here. Hi, great talk, Sudarshan, Wisconsin, Madison. So one question that I had was, like, if you take an existing ballooning mechanism, the overcommitted pages are marked separately with a special page flag, right? They are classified between, like, the regular allocations with the pages that was committed, overcommitted. So I'm wondering, so when the reclamation happens, the OS is able to just target those pages which are overcommitted and then give back the pages to the hypervisor. So in your case, because you're triggering this free pages from the hypervisor, I'm wondering, how do you make sure that the consistency of the data structures in the OS is satisfied? Let's say there is a page and you remove it and the OS is looking for a VMA page and it's not there.
So basically, with a lot of hand waving, we unmap the page. The page is unmapped by the hypervisor before we check the page struct. In Linux, there is a metadata for each page, which is a page struct that says whether the page is free or not. You can deduce from this page struct. So once the page is already unmapped, it cannot become all of a sudden to hold data. And if we do it in an orderly fashion, we should be able to get the correct information. Does it make sense?
What are the pages that are unmapped? Because my VMA would not be exposed to the hypervisor, right?
There is a function, and it's mentioned in the paper, that is already used in Linux kernel in the case of a machine check to see whether a page is free. The page cannot be used during the time that we do this check because it's already unmapped in the virtual machine, and the virtual machine cannot use it while we do this check.
Okay, thanks. I'm Mark Lamarine from Red Hat. It sounds like a certain kind of contract has to exist for this to work between the hypervisor and the running VMs that are making use of it. This looks like it applies the technical aspects of that. Have you looked at all, and the answer may be no, and that may be okay. Have you looked at all at what kind of policies will need to be in place so that the people running the hypervisor and the people running the virtual machines agree on what's allowed, and to ensure that when you start up a VM, that the hypervisor has all the necessary, that both sides have all the necessary information so that the processes can proceed?
So we looked at it to a certain extent. I think you can further look at it. Basically, for example, one of the considerations is whether the memory of the virtual machine can be paged out or not. And of course, if you page out the virtual machine memory and this memory needs to be used for some timely decisions, that's something that can affect your behavior. So in this case, we define policies to certain cases in which the hyper upcalls are only used for notifications of events to the virtual machine versus events in which the hypervisor needs a timely decision. I think it's described in the paper. Okay. I think you can take it to all kind of different levels, but yes, a contract is needed.
Okay. One last question.
Okay, I'm Nicolas Cornet from Technicolor, and the question is, performance monitoring has recently been used to attack security for processors, and By giving non-trusted code the ability to run performance monitoring, do you think you aren't giving the opportunity for additional side channels or covert channels to exist and allow information to be leaked?
Yeah, thanks for the question. And I expected this question. So the answer is complicated, and that's the reason I have a slide. So basically, I would just repeat, some of the attacks, Spectre attacks, used BPF as a proof of concept, and eBPF there are some considerations, concerns about security. But in general, and I'm not talking about the existing technology, in general, we should understand that verification does allow you, if you know what you are looking for, and the program is short, as in our case, you should be able to say whether this program is safe or not. I know. But there is also a good side for our case, because once you have such vulnerabilities, context switch between the host mode and the guest mode becomes more expensive. And then you would want to have such mechanism in order to gain back the performance.